Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us this afternoon are two members of the BST Accounting, Tax, and Advisory Firm in Albany, New York. Jillian Breck and Bob Canterbury are here to answer your questions about financial retirement planning. Jillian oversees the firm's retirement and financial planning sector, while Bob heads up BST's Wealth Management Division. If you have a question about how to best save money for your retirement, call us 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email us if you want, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551, retirement planning. And your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we discuss financial retirement planning. And here to answer your questions are two members of the BST Accounting, Tax, and Advisory Firm in Albany, New York. Jillian Breck oversees the firm's retirement and financial planning sector. She has nearly 20 years of retirement and financial planning, wealth management, investment services, estate planning, project management experience. It's a lot of experience. Jillian provides guidance on the design, implementation, and administration of contribution plans and other employee benefit plans. Bob Canterbury heads up BST's Wealth Management Division. He has about three decades of wealth management experience. Bob's primary focus is to assist clients with investment planning, risk analysis, asset allocation, and investment selection. He also advises clients in the areas of cash flow and retirement, insurance, and estate planning, as well as business succession planning. If you have a question about planning your retirement, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Jillian Breck, Bob Canterbury, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, let's get right to the pessimism here. Is retirement becoming an endangered species?
Well, I think today more than ever, Ray, it's very important for folks to take a very close look at where their money is with respect to retirement planning. A lot of folks have worked very hard to save for retirement. And when you look at today's volatile stock market, I think a lot of people have questions about what they should be doing and how they can review their portfolios.
Well, two questions. Go ahead, Jillian.
Additionally, just wanted to add that there are a lot of companies that have switched to providing retirement benefits to their employees. So it's much more important, more than ever, that people take an active role in saving for their own retirement and rather than having their employer fund everything.
At what age, and this is a tough question, given the vagaries of the economy and society in general, at what age should a person ideally start thinking about this?
Well, it's never too early to start thinking and planning for retirement. Probably heard that motto before.
Yeah.
But
usually you hear it right until retirement.
That's right, right. But I've conducted a lot of financial education seminars, and I hear people kind of make the comment following that I wish I started planning earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people really start to come to grips within 3 to 5 years, typically,
of retirement age.
And by then, in some cases, it could be a little bit too late to really change your financial landscape.
We saw the in the news today, Social Security will be giving the Social Security recipients a 1.6% cost of living or COLA increase. That's about $24 a month for the average Social Security user, the main retirement fund. Is it still viable? Is Social Security still a pillar of one's retirement planning?
Well, I think so, Ray. A lot of younger folks, if you ask that question today, they will tell you that they don't count on it being there.
Mm-hmm.
But as a financial planner, we look at the rules as they are today. And as people pay into Social Security and pay FICA taxes out of their paycheck, you're earning a benefit. And there's a lot of speculation about whether Social Security might change down the road or not. And if that's the case, we can change accordingly. But I think it does fit into retiree income as it stands today, since we are paying into FICA taxes out of our paychecks.
We are joined today by Bob Catterbury and Jillian Breck of BST, and they are here to answer your retirement questions. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we'll get to the calls in a moment. But give us a hypothetical. Tell us, when you meet a client for the first time, what are the first steps that you talk about when planning for retirement?
Well, when I have a prospective client, the first thing that I like to do in a phone call or a meeting is really get to learn and know about the person's situation and their financial goals and objectives. I think it's extremely important to separate your goals between retirement, perhaps saving for college, setting up an emergency cash reserve account. Each goal requires a different strategy, and if we're focusing on retirement planning today, I think it's critical to take a look at how your assets are positioned, meaning the balance between equities and fixed income. I've received a lot of phone calls recently, folks who are a little bit nervous and scared about the market and the economy with the political landscape as it is, and it's very difficult to make timing decisions when it comes to your investments. I always view myself as a financial advisor and a part therapist almost because you have to help people manage their emotions when they see the market go down on a given day. There's a tendency to panic, and you try to encourage people to establish a plan and stick with that.
That's interesting. Jillian, I mean, we mentioned the stock market, and what advice would you give that person who is getting very near retirement age? Do you leave the money in the stock market? Do you liquidate? Do you pull it out? Do you reallocate it to something else? What happens when you are in that 2 to 3 year window before retirement? You have money in the stock market. It's been going, in general, has been going up. It has been having some dips. But what do you do?
The market is cyclical, and we never know what it's going to do from 1 year to the next. And so my advice is to be properly diversified and have your time horizon in place and know what your objectives
are.
What
is the time horizon when the horizon is coming very close?
Well, you have to understand that money needs to last for your entire lifetime. And your retirement or whenever you're going to use that could last 20 or 30 years. Mm-hmm. So because there may be a short decline or there may be, you know, pessimistic views on where the stock market is going to go, that doesn't mean that you're not going to recover at any point in time within the next year or 5 years or 10 years. You know, the bottom line is that you have to try to take the emotions out of this process, because if you look at it only when the downside is coming, then you don't really appreciate the gains. And I think people are much more emotional when they see their hard-earned money go down than they are really appreciative when they see those gains. So, you know, you just have to really make sure that you understand what your personality is. And if you're not comfortable with the amount of risk that you're taking, then maybe it is time to make some adjustments.
In general, though, less risk as you get closer to retirement?
I think that's definitely, you know, generality, but some older people have a higher risk tolerance, too.
I think those with more money can probably tolerate a little more risk than those who are on the cusp of...
But generally speaking, the younger you are, the longer you have to ride out the ups and downs of the market, so you can afford to be more aggressive in your younger years and then get more conservative as you approach your mid-career and late career.
We're joined today by Bob Catterbury and Jillian Breck of BST. We talk retirement on Vox Pop. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Let's go to Taureen in Dalton, Mass. You're on.
Hi, thank you. We received a letter from GE. Apparently, they're trying to get rid of their pension plan. My husband worked for them several years ago for about 15 years, and they gave us several options, whether to take it lump sum. We're 55 right now. Take monthly payments, or what's your advice to do with this pension plan that they want to give to us?
Go ahead.
Now.
That's a great question. I have read in the news about that. I think about 20,000 GE employees are impacted by the pension freeze. And I would say a couple of important things about that is that, number one, pension plans are protected under ERISA guidelines. So I think...
What is ERISA?
ERISA is a 1974 governmental act that protects people who earn pensions from your employer just pulling the rug out and taking that pension away. So this is a little bit different. The pension freeze is saying that you will not accumulate any additional benefits going forward, but you have to make a decision on what you've earned so far. So the decision that these participants are facing is, do you want to take a lump sum payment now, which is in many cases well before retirement age, or would you prefer to take a monthly annuity benefit at some point down the road, typically when you leave or retire? Mm. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages to each. You have to be a little bit careful about those advisors out there, those investment advisors who are leaning toward the lump sum because they want you to invest your money with them. But that's not always a poor choice, because depending on the rate of return that you can earn and how you invest your money, you could potentially replicate the annuity, or even in some cases beat the annuity that you might have gotten from the pension plan. One thing that you have to be very careful about for those that might elect a lump sum are the tax consequences. The IRS has some nasty penalties and taxes for folks that take a distribution and don't roll it over to either an IRA or a 401k plan.
Is that age dependent? Now, our caller mentioned that they are 55.
Yes, it is age dependent, Ray. The IRS says that if you take a distribution from an IRA or a qualified plan before 59 and a half, and that's when it's going to be taxed and an additional 10% penalty tax.
Mm.
There are some exceptions to that rule. But in this case, if I'm taking a lump sum from the GE pension plan, I'm either looking to roll it over to an IRA to defer taxes and still invest it in some other vehicle, or any amount that I do keep, I better be prepared to pay taxes.
All right, Jillian, you want to follow up?
I think he summed it up. I think that, you know, this is a carefully, you want to make sure that you're looking at this carefully with all of the other retirement decisions and other vehicles that you may have, because you may be able to roll into
primary,
other vehicles.
He hasn't worked there in a long time.
He hasn't
it's definitely
worked
not our
time.
Primary means of income, but I just wanted to, we were wondering what to do with it. And thank you so much. You answered a lot of my questions.
Appreciate the call. We have to take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Bob Catterbury and Jillian Breck are here from BST. Retirement on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. The number. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We talk retirement today with Bob Catterbury and Jillian Breck from BST Accounting, Tax, and Advisory in Albany, New York. This email came in, and then we'll jump right back to the phones. This is from Fran. Fran writes, I'm a 58-year-old former GE employee, 12 years, vested in the GE pension plan. My estimated pension benefit, a little over $1,700 a month. I've been informed that I will have either an early monthly option or lump sum offer sometime in October. Your thoughts on the questionable longevity of monthly benefits versus a lump sum? We talked about this a little bit. Any idea on what is a fair lump sum offer and what should be done with a lump sum to maximize or to minimize tax liability? And we did discuss this, but let's go back to the fair lump sum offer. I know it's tough for you to do this without all the particulars. I'd give it a shot.
Well, what I would say about that choice, lump sum versus annuity, and to determine whether or not it's a fair offer, is remember to calculate that actuaries of the pension plan are trying to determine the present value of, in this case, $1,700 a month payable over your remaining lifetime. So the question
is— Which is calculated how?
Well, the actuarial calculation would make an assumption about this person's lifetime. So I believe she said she was 58.
Yes.
So average life expectancy is about 85. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying here is $1,700 a month for 27 years might be worth hypothetically $325,000.
Right.
So they have to follow federal guidelines, though, to make that calculation. the interest rate that they use to calculate that lump sum value is determined under federal guidelines. Mm-hmm. And there's an inverse relationship between interest rates and the amount of the lump sum. And right now, we're in a very interesting environment where interest rates are at historical lows,
right,
which means any firm that's making lump sum payouts like that, the lump sum amounts are high. There's that inverse relationship. So I think you have to look at what investments, if someone does take the lump sum, and remember, you have to roll it over to avoid taxes. If you're going to roll it over, what rate of return do you think you can earn on that lump sum? And if you're not a very savvy investor and you can't sleep at night if the market goes up or down, then maybe the annuity might be a better choice
so
for
stay
you.
Stay with the pension.
Yes.
Bob, I think it's worth noting, too, to you know what happens if you do choose the annuity option and you die 1 month later. What happens to your balance then?
You make a point.
Well, that's an excellent point, Jillian. And certainly it depends on whether or not you're married or you have beneficiaries involved. Because I've seen situations where I might take a single life annuity, which is presumably payable over my lifetime, and I die accidentally, you know, 6 months later, that pension is gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in that case, the lump sum does provide a benefit for estate planning. Right. If something happens to me, I have an amount left over for someone else.
The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Jillian Breck or Bob Canterbury. And now we jump back to the phones. Paul in Clifton Park. Paul.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. I've got a nephew who's going to be getting an inheritance from his grandma. She's passed. And we don't know the amount. Let's say it's $50,000. He has a 401 plan at his job. And I know he can't stick that money in his 401 because it's not earned income at that job.
Right.
So can he stick the or some of the inheritance in a Roth IRA if he sets one up?
So I think the biggest difference that you want to keep in mind between the 401k plan and the Roth IRA, you know, one is pre-tax and could potentially have a Roth feature. So if he does want to pay taxes now and have potentially tax-free earnings on the entire amount, if he holds it in the account at least 5 years and reaches age 59 and a half, that Roth 401k would be advantageous to him. Mm. In a 401k
right, and,
plan, the
and
limits
just,
are $19,000. So he can actually defer up to the amount that the employer is allowing him to put and then use that money. He can dwindle that money down and contribute on a payroll-by-payroll basis. The IRA limits for 2019 is only $6,000. So that would be the maximum he'd be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be able to do a combination of both. But if the Roth feature is available in his 401k plan, you would probably want to consider doing that so that you maximize the contributions for the year.
Good. And even though the inheritance will come with no tax consequences because it's under the cap, so there isn't tax considerations on the on it. So I just thought that because he has a 401 at his work, this money's not coming from his job, that he can't contribute
right.
any of it to it. You said something about dwindle down. I didn't understand that.
So basically, he could increase his contributions to his 401k plan and spend the inheritance so that he can get the $19,000 in there. That would be the maximum.
Brilliant. Okay. Yep, I understand. That's good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jillian Breck, Bob Canterbury here to answer your retirement questions. By the way, before the next call, why 59 and a half? In other words, I'm 59 and not quite a half, and I take a 10% tax hit. Why? Who came up with that?
There's an old joke that it was some congressman who was sitting around, and he happened to be 59 and a half years old, so he made a rule that he could take withdrawals. It's very odd that it's not 60
yeah.
or 65. It just was an original rule that hasn't changed in many, many years.
And I think really it's to discourage folks from dipping into their retirement savings before they should. So the IRS is really saying, you know what, really this is for retirement, so you should keep it in a retirement account until you're really close to retirement. And if you don't, we're going to tax you and penalize you by 10%.
And they talk about Social Security, and there's always, you know, someone's always got their hands up in the air or they're wringing their hands that Social Security is going to die. And one of the things we always hear is, oh, they'll just raise the age. What's the age now?
Well, That's a very common question, Ray, that we get. When should I be taking Social Security?
Yeah.
And under the current rules, you can take it as early as age 62 mm-hmm. with reductions. Based on your date of birth, it can be between 75 to 80% if you take it early.
Yeah.
Full retirement age can range between 65 to 67.
Why does it range? And for whom?
Because it's dependent on your date of birth. So, for example, I'm born in 1964, and so my full retirement age is 66.
Ah.
Anyone born after 1960, it's a sliding scale, basically.
I did not know that.
So now, my full retirement age would be 67, born in 1980.
Right. Aha. Right. So they make you wait a little longer to get full benefits.
And you hope you live that long. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Retirement today with Jillian Breck and Bob Canterbury. And let's go to Sue in Delmar. Hello, Sue.
Hi. I just have a simple question. You mentioned the FICA tax, meaning the Social Security tax, which is the normal deduction on a paycheck. Would the OASDI be the same?
No, those are actually two different taxes that actually come out of your paycheck. The FICA tax, as you said, is Social Security tax, and on earned wages, they deduct 6.2% for FICA tax. The OASDI is actually Medicare tax, which is another 2.65%, 1.45, excuse me. So the total is 7.65, so the OSDI is Medicare and the FICA is Social Security.
Okay, there you go, Sue.
Yep.
Well, then if I don't see FICA deducted on a paycheck, I'm not getting Social Security deducted?
No, not all types of wages are subject to FICA taxes. I would also point out that there is what's called the Social Security wage base. So once your wages and earnings exceed a certain level, they no longer take out FICA taxes. So it's either you might have a governmental type of pension that is not subject to FICA taxes, or you may be over the limit and they're not taking FICA out any longer.
I would definitely not be over the limit. I'm an earned income worker. I'm a server in a restaurant in a hotel.
Okay.
And all I've ever seen over the last few years deducted off my checks are OASDI, and I thought that was Social Security. Yeah. So what do you recommend I do? Because I'll be of age to draw Social Security at 65 next year.
Well, what I would suggest, there are slightly different rules for folks in the restaurant business that are waiters and servers mm-hmm. as far as how wages are taxed. So I might ask your employer how they're handling FICA taxes, and maybe it's not required from that particular industry.
Okay. Sue, thanks a lot and good luck. Is New York a lousy place to retire?
It's an expensive place to retire.
Yes. From a tax perspective, certainly not very favorable. I think New York and California are two of the highest tax states for retirees, which is probably one of the big reasons why we see snowbirds, you know, head to Florida for a couple months, Arizona. There are many, many articles that come out frequently about good places to retire, but it's not just taxes, right? There's a saying that says, don't let the tax tail wag the dog.
Mm.
So I'm not just going to choose where I want to live and retire just solely because of the income taxes, because some states like Florida and others, they get their tax revenue other ways, whether it's sales tax or estate tax or sometimes called intangibles tax. So taxes is part of it, but not the driving factor. But New York is not a very tax-friendly place to live.
Our number here is 800, well put and diplomatically done. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jillian Breck, Bob Canterbury, our guest today on Vox Pop. We talk retirement. And we go to Joe in Red Hook. Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hello.
Good. Listen, real quick, I'm like 61. My better half is 62. And I was wondering if we are currently not married and we've been together for 20 years, but we're not married, and we're thinking about retiring not too far away. And are there advantages, and are they worthwhile if we were married as far as tax implications, Social Security implications and that kind of stuff?
Well, that kind of depends. You kind of covered a few different scenarios there, Joe. But what I think you're driving at is that there used to be, from a federal tax standpoint, there used to be something called the marriage penalty, where if you filed your tax return married filing joint, you ended up paying more tax than if you filed separately. That rule changed several years ago. So now they're really, from a federal tax standpoint, there's no benefit of filing jointly versus married filing All separate. Right.
Okay, what if you're – okay, but is married still better than she's single, I'm single technically, and we file separately, obviously. But you see what I'm saying? Is there a – if we were married,
okay,
filing separately, is it the same as being single filing separately? You know what I mean? Is there any consequence one way or the other?
Well, the only thing to be careful about, I think potentially there could be, that if you file separately, because, again, sounds like you're maybe not legally married, is that you have certain AGI thresholds, adjusted gross income, that might limit certain contributions, for example, to IRAs or certain deductions. So, yeah, I would have to look into it a little more closely, but there could be some impact on that end.
All right. Worthy of study. Joe, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. And Will in Delmar. Will, you're on.
Yes, thank you. I'm 80 years old, and I've got an IRA, which is mostly invested in equities. I'm interested in diversifying into, you know, bonds or something of that nature. But I've been looking at preferred stocks. In the past, I had some very good luck with them. I'm wondering what it might be the pros and cons in my situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that most investors, the average person, probably doesn't know very much about preferred stocks. I think most people understand, you know, companies like GE and Apple, that I'm part owner of the company, and as the share value goes up, I participate in those gains. And some stocks pay dividends. If you own preferred stock, then you actually are a different class of owner. You're still part owner of that company, XYZ, and you might be the beneficiary of higher or additional dividends than maybe an average shareholder.
Yeah.
My first inclination is that anyone that is 80 years old really has to take a close look at what percentage of my assets do I really want to have in equities and stocks to begin with.
In other words, tied up?
Exactly. Because the market, as we know, is very, very volatile. And I would hate to see someone who has a fixed income or estate planning concerns lose a good deal of value if the market turns south very quickly. So it sounds like that Will may be a little bit more of a sophisticated investor because he has preferred stocks. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying it's inappropriate to have those. But a general rule would be if you don't know exactly how they work, you probably should be cautious about holding those in the first place.
Well, the only problem I had in the past was that my preferred stock got called, so I got the my initial investment back, but I stopped getting that. At that time, I was getting 10% on the investment that I had.
Yeah, that's probably why it was called, right? They were paying you 10%, and rates are down to one or two, so they said, "Hell, let's call Will's stock in."
All right, Will, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Paul in Westport. Paul, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My question may not be unrelated to the previous one. My retirement's been with the teacher retirement system, and I am facing required minimum distribution. And I'm wondering what I should do with that money. I mean, I'm not 80 yet, but I'm almost there.
Okay.
So, Paul, if you're not working there any longer, the IRS requires that you take your minimum distributions by age 70 and a half.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah, I know that.
So you're going those, unfortunately, cannot be rolled over anywhere. So you have to pay the taxes on that. Oh. You've deferred taxes for a long time, and the IRS wants to get paid.
I understand that. I don't need all of the money right now. Hmm. What should I do with it?
Well, I think what happens for some of my clients that have these required minimum distributions or RMDs, if it's money that you don't need, you are able to deposit that or invest it in a regular taxable brokerage account. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's one option. Another option that's available now, just in recent tax years, is you are able to make charitable contributions with RMDs, whereas the amount that you make, I think it's up to $100,000 a year, mm-hmm. that amount of RMD that you decide to contribute to charity would not be taxable. So that's a relatively new planning opportunity for those that might be charitably inclined.
I put some money in CDs. Is that too conservative?
Well, I think it depends.
You know, very low rate these days.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's a very low rate, but very low risk, right? So if you like to sleep at night and not worry about the stock market, CDs could be a very safe place, and a lot of people do that because they don't want to have to worry about what the president tweets today or what's going on with the China trade tariffs. So that could be a suitable option.
I always worry about what he tweets, but that's another story.
Okay, well, Paul, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Bob Canterbury and Jillian Breck are here, and they are from BST, and we will be back with more retirement calls in a moment. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. It's retirement planning today with Jillian Breck and Bob Canterbury of BST. One email, and then we will go to the home stretch and get as many calls in as we can. This one is from Ed. Ed writes, my financial advisor is suggesting I convert my mutual fund investments and 401k plans over to annuities to avoid the roughly $30,000 in taxes I'm paying yearly. When should one consider converting to conservative annuities? I'm 62 years old, in good health, plan on working past age 65. And that's from Ed.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing I would say about annuities is that there are many different types of annuities, so you should fully understand exactly what you're getting into. And what I mean by that is that there are single premium fixed annuities, there are variable annuities, all that have different features as far as surrender charges and getting your money out, or when you're able to commence receiving monthly benefits. I would highly encourage you to fully understand the differences between those types of annuities, first of all. They can make sense in the fact that they do defer taxes for as long as you are not receiving the income.
Yeah.
So it sounded like for this gentleman, he might consider an annuity for a couple years, and then when he does retire, he can commence the monthly benefit, and then those payments become taxable. So there could be the tax advantage on the front end, but the negatives that I do hear about with annuities is that, number one, they tend to be high commissioned products. So you might be paying a high upfront fee to get in an annuity. That's not always the case, but you want to make sure about that. And then the survivor feature, similar to a pension. What if I'm collecting on my annuity for 6, 8, 10 years, and I expect to collect over my lifetime, but I die early? In most cases, it stops. And it's not payable to anyone else. So that's a negative if I die early with annuities.
Okay. What about precious metal? What about gold? No?
Well, that comes up quite a bit lately, Ray, in this environment.
You see a lot of TV ads.
With volatility,
it's
the perfect time. It's viewed as a safe haven. It's a protection against the unstable economy and the environment. And more popular these days are gold ETFs as opposed to physically owning gold coins.
Right.
Owning and trading gold coins is a bit cumbersome. So a lot of folks do purchase gold ETFs simply as a hedge.
What does an ETF stand for?
Exchange Traded Fund.
Okay. This is what I find a little nebulous.
Okay.
I go to Bob and I put $50,000 in a gold ETF. It's a piece of paper. What happens when Ray wants to go get his gold? Does he back the truck up, or does that gold not really exist?
No. So similar to what I was saying, that it's not actually owning gold coins or bullion or anything like that.
So you can't get it.
It's liquid. Yes, it is. It's like a mutual fund. The difference between an ETF and a mutual fund is that an ETF can be traded during the day, whereas a mutual fund trades at 4 p.m. Eastern time at the end of the day. So if I own a gold ETF, and let's say that I want to sell it at 11 o'clock this morning, I can do that. There's a marketplace to do that, and I can get my cash back for my investment. So it works more like a mutual fund.
I'm not suggesting people put gold coins under their bed, but when the electromagnetic pulse comes, that ETF certificate's not going to do me much good, right?
That's true. That's true. It's the paper that it's on.
All right. Let's dispense with the pessimism and go back to the calls. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jillian Breck and Bob Canterbury, guests today on the program. Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Hopefully this isn't beyond your expertise. I'll give it a shot. As far as Social Security payments, I'm a dual citizen. If I were at some point in my retirement to go, you know what, I think I'll become a citizen of the other country, well, would it have any effect on my Social Security payments I've earned?
Well, that depends. I don't think it would impact the benefit that you've earned, Mike. So you earned a benefit from the U.S., for your working career here, the FICA taxes that you paid in. So that amount is payable to you because you earned it. It doesn't matter where you live, what your address is. But from a tax standpoint, that's where it could become tricky. Some countries have reciprocal tax arrangements where the question is, do you owe tax on that in your new country of residence? Will the U.S. will tax it, but there may be a reciprocal arrangement where the tax is mitigated. So that's where I would be a little careful on the taxation of it.
Okay.
So find a country that would have the reciprocal agreement.
Yes, that's generally a favorable thing. Okay. So you're not taxed both from the U.S. and the country that you live in.
Mike, thank you for the call. We appreciate it very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, and the number is 1-800-348-2551. Julie in Northampton. Julie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. My question is about my wife, who's a school teacher. That's why I'm calling instead of her. We lived in Arizona for 21 years, where she taught as a school teacher and paid into Social Security and into the Arizona State Retirement Fund pension program there. Then we moved to Massachusetts 10 years ago. And we were told that in Massachusetts, public school teachers don't pay into Social Security. So she only pays into the retirement fund. But we were also told that there's some thing that they call that you can't double dip. So that in some way, the Social Security that she's already paid into for 21 years in Arizona, she'll get only a portion of it. And unless she pays into it for another 9 years, after 30 years, apparently they can't, you know, they can't take it. But she doesn't have that 30 years. So we're trying to figure out, she loves teaching in the public schools. Should she continue to do that? She's only 55. Or does she need to now get out and teach, you know, work in Starbucks or something so she can pay into Social Security for 10 more or for 9 more years to get what she's already paid into?
Well, I think your situation that you outlined kind of crosses a few different lines with respect to what might she be eligible from federal Social Security versus what has she earned in the teacher's pension system. I don't profess to know the Massachusetts state rules as a New York resident, but it sounds like there may be some overlap. I wouldn't necessarily say that she should stop working as a teacher. I suspect that the 20 years that she worked in Arizona still certainly does count toward her federal Social Security benefit. All you have to have is 40 quarters, or roughly 10 years of earnings to qualify for federal Social Security. And it sounds like she accomplished that with her career in Arizona.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's just some problem with the Massachusetts state law that where we've been told, warned, that will be calculated differently, the federal her federal benefit will be calculated differently unless she has 30 years to sort of protect it from this Massachusetts issue.
Yeah, I would suggest you maybe look into that, maybe call Social Security to get a little more clarity on that one.
Yeah.
All right, Julie, thanks for the call. And now to Dawn in Massachusetts. Dawn, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. My husband had a full career with a particular company, and he has a 401k there. He's now 70 and a half and has to take an RMD. He's still working, however. His 401k with his current job could receive a rollover from his funds in the previous 401k. My question, and therefore defer the RMD. My question has to do with how to accomplish that rollover, and if it's over 500,000, for example, would you want to move that all at once? Would you do it over a period of time? And it must be done by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Now you've got our financial planners excited. This is a good one.
Yes, I like the attempt to try to
continue to defer the taxes,
right,
and not
right,
have to
and
take
not
the
pay
R&D.
Taxes sooner than you have to. So if I understood that scenario correctly, the husband has a 401k at a prior employer, is
yes.
currently over 70 and a half, but still working at the new employer. Is
so
that
if
right?
he rolls
right.
the money right. over, he doesn't
so
have to take
if,
the R&D.
So if he does, now can I just confirm, he has not started the mandatory distributions from the prior plan yet? Has he started those?
That's correct.
Okay, that's key.
This would be the first year that he would be required to do so based
yeah.
on the year-end 2018
yeah.
balances.
So if you roll over to the new plan before he starts those mandatory distributions, then I believe you're okay.
Wow.
If you had started those, I don't think you can stop. So I think
no, he hasn't started. My understanding is before he does the rollover, he still will be required to take the
right.
This year's
yes.
from
RMD.
The old plan.
Right.
From the old
he
plan.
He still has
on
to
the old
take
plan.
The first
yeah.
So
RMD.
If he rolls it over, then he would avoid that because there is a rule that says if you're still working in your current 401k, you don't have to take mandatory distributions until you
really?
Retire or leave from that job. Yes.
And I would just...
Even though he has an RMD that's required on the old one, because he turned 70 and a half this year.
So he still has to take the RMD before he rolls it over. So he'll pay
yeah,
taxes on the RMD and then he can roll it over.
Yeah.
The second part of your question was in regards to should he do it all at once. Typically
yeah.
the rules of the plan will allow you to take distributions in several different ways. A lot of organizations have a lump sum as the only option to take when you leave the company. So you just have to check on the rules of the plan for distributions because you may not be able to take partial withdrawals.
All right, Dawn, great,
okay.
great call. Thank you very much. And now to Deborah in Massachusetts. Deborah, you're on.
Yes, hello. I made a mistake last year around Christmas time. I kind of panicked and I took my money out of the 401k and I put it into an IRA to just let it sit there. And then, of course, the market went crazy up. Because I thought it was just going to whittle down, you know, it was going way down. So my question, at the end of this year, what my plan is, I'm going to wait to the end of this year and wait until people cash out until the market goes lower and then get back in. Do you think that's a good plan?
Well, you better get out your Ouija board for this one.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a little bit dangerous
mm-hmm.
to try to time the market and predict when to get in or when to get out.
I agree.
What I would suggest to you and many others is that this is a perfect time to look at whatever savings or investments you have and really do a self-evaluation of your risk tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is risk tolerance is asking yourself some simple questions like, when do I think I will need this money? When am I going to start drawing from that? What would
yeah.
I do if the stock market dropped 20% in 1 month? Would I move everything to cash? Would I kind of wait for a rebound and then sell? Or maybe some people buy more. You need to evaluate your own personal risk tolerance. Now, going back to the fact that you took a 401k and you rolled it to an IRA, that's perfectly fine. But remember, an IRA is not like one big CD that just earns 2 or 3%. An IRA is a vehicle that you can invest in other things, like mutual funds or stocks and bonds. So it sounded like you thought that when you rolled it to an IRA, you were missing out on all these big gains and appreciation. Which
so it's not a monolith. You can play around.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Inside the IRA, you can choose different equity investments, CDs, fixed income, and your returns could potentially emulate or even do better than a 401k sometimes.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I'm 59 and a half right now. So I'm kind of there.
Deb, so, you're not alone. Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, when you get closer to retirement, you start to really be emotional about those losses. And so just try to keep it at bay. You've got a long life to live and, you know,
hopefully,
pick a good advisor that's going to help you through these challenging times, because I think that once you get that out of the equation, I think we're all better investors.
All right. You're suggesting Deborah steps off the ledge and come
get
on
off
back.
The ledge, really, Deb.
Take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jillian Breck and Bob Canterbury dispensing optimism here from BST. And over to line 8, Al in Albany. Al.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm interested in knowing what would be the best decision to make with an annuity that stops earning any money at age 80. But you can annuitize for a guaranteed period of 20 years.
Well, this kind of borders on the question similar that we had earlier about annuities. I think each contract can be different. It sounds like at age 80, under this one, that you have to make a decision to probably start receiving income. I would have to say from my experience that most people that own annuities start receiving income well before age 80, but if you haven't, that stipulation about starting it sounds pretty common to me. And if that continues for a 20-year period, that puts you at 100 years old. So I think that's the whole plan, is that it's going to pay out. I would probably take a closer look, Al, at what the survivor benefit is. If something happened to you, would it continue being paid to a beneficiary, or is there a lump sum payable to your
estate? It's a guaranteed 20 years, whether I'm alive or dead.
Okay. So it would presumably be payable to someone if you pass away before
To a beneficiary that I name.
Yeah. I think that's pretty standard.
My children.
Standard stuff. I would go ahead and commence the annuity, and if you don't need the income, then you could look for other investment alternatives.
All right. Thank you very much for that one. Let's quickly go over to Williamstown, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on.
Hey, thanks, Ray, and everybody. Jumping back to maybe a previous question, I'm 64. My girlfriend is 60. Would there be survivor benefits? Real simple question. Survivor benefits if we got married and she would then receive my Social Security, should I shuffle off the mortal plane?
Well said.
Well, the rules with Social Security, Dave, if you're not married now, then each of you presumably would be entitled to your own benefit that you've earned on your own work history. But I think your question is, if you do get married, I think the only rule is that you have to be married for at least 9 months for her to be eligible for any type of widow or survivor benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason for that rule is that you can't just get married on your deathbed in hopes of passing on Social Security to your newly married wife.
But again, why 9 months? It's like 59 and a half. Who came up with 9 months? What's up with that?
That's another one of those funny rules, Ray. I don't know where the 9 months is. You know, why not make it a year or something around like that?
Well, you've opened up many mysteries, but answered several of them. So thank you both for being here. Support comes from Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear. They're high-fiving. Things went well. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear, European styling, and prescription and non-prescription sunglasses. Eye exams by appointment. EYEDENTITY eyewearalbany.com. At Curtis Lumber, announcing their new kitchen showrooms featuring kitchen design trends and cabinets from Wellborn and Merrillat, and quartz countertops from Cambria. Quartz not quartz lumber, curtislumber.com. The quartz and the Curtis, it gets me every time. Thanks again to Jillian Breck and Bob Canterbury of BST in Albany for joining us today. Love the calls today. Well done. Thank you for the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. The phones are answered by Mr. Apollo, and our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, a number of vendors taking part in the upcoming Saratoga International Flavor Feast will join us for a global culinary tour. It's a flavor feast, people. It's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.